On today's episode of The Good Word, Nikola Jokic enjoyed at least one more night as the best basketball player in the world. Tibbs coaches his ass off as the Knicks take control of their series against the Pacers. And LeBron showed up in Cleveland to draw attention to himself. What else is new? That and producer John on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcasts, your CDs, and your tapes. It is Wednesday, which means it is me and producer John. John, how late did you stay up last night? I guess I should ask that question.
I mean, I stayed up until the end of Timberwolves Nuggets, which I think was about 10 o'clock Pacific.
I don't know, because I didn't get back to my hotel till like 2 o'clock, maybe 2:30. And I was still wired. Like, what we witnessed last night, amongst other things, like, of course, for those who don't know, I'm in Denver. Denver took a 3-2 lead last night, 112-97. I expect that they'll close this series out tomorrow in front of a very energetic crowd at Target Center. Cool. Let's get that part out the way. Pleasantries. There were no pleasantries at Ball Center last night. Ball Arena, whatever the hell it's called. Okay? There were no pleasantries there. It was absolutely amazing to see Nikola Jokic have one of the greatest playoff games I've ever seen from him. Not that I've seen all of them in person, but these past 2 years, I've been covering a lot of the Denver Nuggets. And last night was, it was the signature game of the series for him. 2-2, swing game. You kind of had the feeling that the Nuggets had their wake-up call. You kind of had the feeling that the Nuggets were going to take control of the series at home in a weird series where nobody had won a home game up until last night. But one thing stuck out for me. One thing amongst so many things stuck out for me, John. Everybody loves banging on Rudy Gobert. And I don't mean like dunking on Rudy Gobert, like dunking over a 7-footer. I mean dunking on a 7-footer. I mean Twitter. I mean Draymond Green. Everybody loves banging on Rudy. Let me tell you who could have defended Nikola Jokic last night, right? It's a gentleman who I believe has a grand total of maybe one Defensive Player of the Year award. Okay? One. You want to know his name, John? I've said his name before. He's not a real person, but I'm going to say his name. You know his name, John?
This is a cross between a couple different players, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is Hakeem Duncan. That is the only person on God's green earth that can guard Nikola Jokic with what he was doing last night. He's jumping out the wrong foot. He's fading away. He's leaning in. He's pirouetting. He's beating double teams. He's hitting threes like he was doing in the Western Conference Finals last year against Anthony Davis, where Anthony Davis, all he could do was shake his head and smile. You know, when you can shake your head and smile, when somebody's lighting your ass up and there's nothing you can do about it, right? But everybody likes banging on Rudy Gobert as if they could do better. Draymond Green might be one of the most versatile defenders on earth, and he would have had nada. Karl Towns gets in foul trouble. What else is new? You know, Naz Reid had a couple of good moments. The Timberwolves as a whole did just enough to make you believe that they could steal game five late. They were shooting threes early. I think they were 6-13 in the first half. The Ant-Man hadn't gotten off. He had one field goal in the first half. We're going to get to the Ant-Man later, right? We're going to get to him later. I'm not going to give him short thrift. We're going to focus on Jokic right now. Jokic did to Rudy Gobert, a four-time Defensive Player of the Year award winner. Now, mind you, we all know this it's an offensive league. When a player gets it going, there's nothing you can do about it. But because we like banging on Rudy, we want to say, this is Rudy's fault. Maybe it is. Maybe them's the breaks, right? Maybe this is Hakeem Olajuwon going against David Robinson in the 95 Western Conference Finals, right? Remember that? Where David Robinson wins the MVP, He's standing on, you know, standing center stage. He receives the trophy. And Hakeem Olajuwon says, "I'm going to go get my trophy." And he does the crossover, the dream shake, the up and under. It was like literally you saw David Robinson's ghost leave his body, come back, and then leave his body again. You know what I mean? Like when they say, when people go to jail or prison for the rest of their life and they say you got double life or triple life, you know what that means? That means if you die twice, you got to come back and serve another 20 years. That's what it felt like for Rudy Gobert last night in Karl Towns. And the entire Minnesota Timberwolves team, okay? Nothing the man could do. Like I remember Shaq doing to David Robinson and Tim Duncan what Jokic was doing. I remember Michael Jordan putting the clown suit on Clyde Drexler in the 1992 NBA Finals. This is what happens when sometimes there's no answer. And it's important to remember, Rudy Gobert is not a defensive player of the year because of what he can do on the ball. His value is what happens when he's off the ball. He's a much greater team defender that can cover all other parts of the floor, that can alleviate pressure and mistakes, and he protects the rim really well. And he protected the rim, and he defended Jokic really well until last night. Jokic went 8-9 against that dude. That meant, you know what that meant, John? You know what that meant?
What's that?
At about, I think it was about 4:30 p.m. yesterday, Mountain Time, 4:30 p.m. You know what happened?
He sent the limo?
He sent the limo, baby. Nikola Jokic said, "Get your ass here on time. I'm going to wear you out." And guess what? Guess who else is in that limo with you? Naz Reid is in that limo. Karl Towns is in that limo. Chris Finch is in that limo. Ooh. Everybody you can fit was in that limo. He wore all of them out. Okay? Now, Karl Towns did get hurt. He looked like he was limping a little bit at points. It was a weird thing for Karl Towns because he fell down when he was trying to drive against KCP, fell down on his right knee, right leg, limped around, would hit a shot, come back down, limp again. It was just the weirdest thing. Couldn't really figure it out. And I don't even want to say that Karl redeemed himself after his disastrous game 4. Rudy Gobert was 7-7 from the field. He didn't miss a shot. But the reason why, if people have not believed in the Minnesota Timberwolves as a staff, record label, and crew, is largely because of those two guys in playoff settings. And here's what I mean. Karl Towns made some nifty passes to Rudy Gobert underneath the rim to get him some looks. But when you get 7-foot dudes and you cannot post them up when you have switches, when you get smalls on bigs and bigs on smalls, and they just can't plant their asses in the post, turn, face, and dunk on someone, you know what that's called? It's called liability. Rudy Gobert wasn't a defensive liability yesterday. He was an offensive liability. And I'll tell you why. You're like, wait, Vinny, how is he not a defensive liability when Jokic got 40, 13, 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block with no turnovers? Okay. No turnovers. Now you're saying, how is Rudy an offensive liability? I'll tell you why. Because I will present to you the stat line of Anthony Edwards. 5 of 15, 1 of 5 from 3. He did give you 9 dimes and 4 boards. The Denver Nuggets decided yesterday, and this is what happens a lot of times, you know, through the course of the playoffs. And this is why I love the playoffs more than anything else on earth. I don't get sleep. I'm sleep deprived. I travel a lot. I'm out of my mind with delirium from April to June, but I love it. And here's why, because you see the adjustments from game to game. You see who can really coach. You can see who can really play. You see who can read stuff on the fly and who really needs to adjust with film. And what happened yesterday, Anthony Edwards was failed by everybody that he played with. Now, mind you, Mike Conley Jr. was out with a right Achilles strain. He actually hurt it on the last play of game 4 in Minneapolis. And Mike Conley is old, right? Remember, Mike Conley graduated high school the same year as Greg Oden, except Mike Conley looked like a kid and Greg Oden looked like he was his daddy, right? So we tend to forget that Mike Conley is one of the elder statesmen in this. So when your Achilles hurts, you're going to sit your ass down because the next step may be your last step in NBA terms. So they had to sit him down. What that meant for Anthony Edwards was he had no safety valve. They were stringing out every pick and roll. He had those 9 assists because that was a function of him handling the ball. But conversely, what that meant was he had the ball. The Nuggets were going to send 2 at him and then a third set of eyeballs. They literally did boxes and elbows the entire night. He had no space. I felt so bad for him because he wanted to get to certain spots on the floor, but he had no help. And his teammates were not in positions to space the floor, get defenders out of his way. They were just like frozen in a way. So there was nobody that Ant could deliver the ball to, receive the double team, deliver the ball, and then get it back on the cut, get it back on the move. He very rarely got it like that. But that is a player, a great player, who is going through the playoffs for the very first time. And I know he played last year, but you get what I'm saying. And he played against the Memphis Grizzlies in the Looney Tunes series a couple years ago. Remember the Looney Tunes series? Where it was Memphis and Minnesota, and they both looked like, you know, clown cars crashing into each other. And that was the T. Morant, Carl Towns senior series where they were both, well, T. Morant was a bit litty on the sidelines. And we thought that was real cute and funny. Remember that? Remember that, John? We thought this Ja Morant thing was funny and his daddy out here looking like Usher and everybody just had a good old time. And then Ja Morant decided to go play with guns. We realized maybe we shouldn't be putting your daddy on TV. All right, cool. This was the first time a 2-2 series on the road where the home team or the team that wins game 5 of a series. Y'all know the stats. You see it on the board all the time. It's like 85% or something like that. Maybe it's a little less. But this is where the Denver team that is the champions showed up with a wrinkle that you rarely see as late as game 5 in a playoff series. Ant scored 44 in game 4, and the Nuggets decided, Michael Jordan ain't doing that again. Michael Malone, his daddy, Brenda Malone. Brenda Malone, one of the architects of the Jordan rules. Now we can't do the Jordan rules anymore, you know, because Michael Jordan whined and Scottie Pippen became Sitting Bull. And we had to make the game a little bit more palatable. And I actually think if you put Ant-Man on his ass, Ant-Man would get up and be right back at you. I don't think Ant-Man would be that level of soft, and he wouldn't allow for any of that. But just because the Ant-Man is ready does not mean that his teammates are ready. And just because the Timberwolves have a comparable record to the Denver Nuggets in the regular season does not mean that they are comparable playoff teams. Ant had no problem after the game saying, that's the best player in the world. I give him complete props for that, right? Ant is going for that crown. He wants to be the best player in the world. He's probably going to be the best player in the world before too long. But Ant-Man is 22. Jokic is creeping up on 30. I talked to a couple players in the Nuggets locker room last night, and I brought something to him. And I was like, is this a matter of the Minnesota Timberwolves being a better team, but they don't know it? And a couple of them looked at me and was like, yeah, they don't know it. They don't get it. They don't see it. And you see it in the moments. You see it when Aaron Gordon ran down a loose ball and dunked it over Towns to break. I think it was a 35-35 tie, 33-33 tie. Like, it's those little bitty moments where you know a game or the next 5 minutes will be decided in who makes a play. And the Timberwolves decided, we're going to run our asses right into 3 consecutive offensive fouls. We're going to run right in the charges. We're just going to do things that are not befitting of a championship team. While the Denver Nuggets didn't play their best game. Like, Michael Porter Jr. was throwing air balls up there. He does not look good. He has not looked good since the Lakers series. Jamal Murray doesn't look like the player which you could expect when you got a guy playing on a cap and he's playing every other day. You know what I mean? What's up, John?
Finish your Murray thought, and then I have a Murray thought as well.
Like, I thought that he played well into knowing, oh, Jokic got it going. Let me just make sure I get out the way. But he wasn't trying to exert himself, you know what I'm saying, throughout the game. Like, he's taking his second lease on life, you know what I mean, after his Canadian temper tantrum in game two. And he's been veteran-like here. Now, John has a point.
I think the offensive performance you were talking about from Jokic and saying, like, we've never really seen him reach those levels. This just reminded me of playoff Jokic from last year. And I remember last year during the regular season, it was like, when is Jokic going to realize that he needs to be their primary scorer for things to open up for everybody else? You can't get the gravity of the defense by just being a great passer and rebounder. You have to prove that if they put one man on you, you are going to put up huge numbers. You're going to put them in the basket. You're going to make them pay. And Jokic did that in the playoffs last year. What I've seen from Jokic in the playoffs this year is a lot of him trying to get his guys going by setting them up with passes and not necessarily setting himself up as a scorer first to get that gravity. What I saw in the fourth quarter from Jamal Murray felt like last year's Jamal Murray, or healthy Jamal Murray, or the all-star, borderline all-star Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
But it was only after Jokic got to the point where the Timberwolves were like, we cannot defend this man with one guy. We just can't do it. And they started sending two and kind of like leaking a third towards him, going like, he's just one guy. He just destroys him. And that's when Murray got to get into his bag and start doing those like bank shots and high layups over the outstretched hand of Rudy Gobert. I saw Jamal Murray look like Jamal Murray once the defense was worried about Jokic's scoring. And that's the main thing that convinced me last night. I was like, this looks like last year's Nuggets team.
Yeah, he has them. Jokic has you off balance. As a series moves on, like, two things happens. I'm a firm believer that in game four of a closely contested playoff series, we figure out two things. We figure out who the better team is. We figure out who's going to win the series. And those two things do not have to be the same team. You can figure out that, hey, man, these Timberwolves, they could actually be the better team here. But you can figure out that they don't realize it and that they're not going to win the series because they don't take advantage of the moment. That's exactly what happened. And I'm firmly of the belief, if you go back and read one of our roundtables at Yahoo Sports that we do, you know, periodically throughout the course of each playoff round, I said Nuggets in six. I said each team went on the other team's home floor and the Nuggets will win the last two games. And I think the Nuggets now realize, hey, all right, we're going to see what's going on over there in Dallas and Oklahoma City. They're also looking across the way and saying, if Boston's going to have a cakewalk to the finals, which they very well could, we need to take care of business so that we're not bloodied and bruised and beat up. And one thing I saw last night, walking off the floor, Nikola Jokic is blowing kisses to his family. And everybody's going to have their jokes about Rudy. But he had two big scratches on his arm. So did Aaron Gordon. So when they got to the locker room and talked to Aaron Gordon, I said, Aaron, do you see your big scratch? He said, no, I didn't even notice that. And Jokic comes out of the shower and in his deadpan way says, look, we're twins. Look, we both got scratches. It was just kind of one of those funny things. So to answer your question, to quote from the Players Club, yes, they did pinch him. They scratched him. They touched him, but he touched him up. If he got a scratch, Rudy Gobert got tire tracks on his back. Now, speaking of getting their asses run over last night, that was the Knicks and the Pacers. The Pacers, when I left my hotel, John, the Pacers were up like 16-9. I was like, okay, this series is going to go the way that I thought. You know, maybe the Knicks will run out of bodies, all this other stuff. I get to the arena a few minutes later. The Knicks are up like 16. And they wind up winning by 30, 121-91. They lead 3-2. They go to Indy in a couple of days. I think it's on Friday. They have an extra day. But I give Tom Thibodeau a lot of shit in general. Or I give the Tom Thibodeau super supporters a lot of shit. You know, like the Frank Isolas, who I love, who say, you can't talk about Tom Thibodeau playing this guy too many minutes. He plays Josh Hart like 55 minutes a night in a 48-minute game. Like, can't do that. But as much as I like to, you know, tweak, Tibbs is a hell of a coach. The fact that he put Deuce McBride in the starting lineup in place of Precious Achiuwa, right? A fresher player. You're playing small across all four positions. You got more space for Jalen Brunson. And you got a guy that can pressure Tyrese Halliburton. It was a nice wrinkle from the Knicks when usually you don't see wrinkles from Tibbs late in series. Now, Tyrese Halliburton, he need to have a come to Jesus or come to his God conversation because he can't be out here taking 9 shots. Like, that is not going to be it. Now, we can get into, you know, our boy White Dante. That's Bomani's nickname for Dante DiVincenzo. Basically telling Miles Turner, you're not like that. You know what I mean? He's basically telling him, you are not that dude. You are not out here trying to be tough. That is not how you guys are. But also, you can't be calling people the magic word when people are catching it. Them's fighting words.
I was surprised. I was impressed that Dante DiVincenzo was not really backing down. He was backpedaling a little bit, but Miles Turner's got like a foot on him. Like, that was a big man that Dante was staring down.
Weight classes for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Weight classes for a reason. Like, I'm sure I've told the story about on here about maybe possibly initiating or at least not backing down from a potential fight with a future NFL football player. That would not have gone well for me that day, just like that would not have gone well for Dante DiVincenzo last night. But when you get your teammates in between, you don't have to be the toughest dude. And when you're in Madison Square Garden and they love you there, you can't really back down, especially when you get the old Knicks right there on the sidelines, you know what I mean, just waiting. And remember, almost, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 25 years ago, 26 years ago, mind you. Wait, let me start that over. 27 years ago, almost to the day, Knicks Heat, Charlie Ward, PJ Brown being thrown into the stands at the old Miami Arena, and that was the first brawl that we had seen between those two teams, John Starks, Allen Houston, Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson, all those dudes being suspended. All those dudes were actually in attendance for game 5. So if you're Dante, you know you got backup. That's all. You know you got backup. It's cool. Now, I don't know if the Knicks are going to win game 6. I think they are better off trying to win game 6 than game 7 just because of the quick turnaround. Friday night game to a Sunday afternoon game. I would suspect that they will win this series because they're playing tougher. I just wouldn't take no chances. That's all. If you can put them away on Friday, the problem is the Pacers haven't lost a game at home since like 3 years ago. So there's that. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of the other playoff series, the remaining playoff series to go, and LeBron showing up courtside at the Cleveland Cavaliers playoff game against Boston. Does it mean anything? We'll see. We'll find out. You're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Welcome back to The Good Word. Now, John, I feel like you have a question for me. I feel like you have a couple of questions for me as we transition to the Dallas-Oklahoma City series. That series is tied at 2. That was a bit of a surprise finish in Dallas. Watching Dallas just completely lose any semblance of, you know, offensive rhythm and watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander slow-mo his way to 41 in the finale, in that towards the end of that game and really sort of take over. I feel like you got two questions for me because there's two questions in the rundown. So I'll just let you. Well, first off, do you have any mourning to do over game four before we move on?
I'm going to quote Dave Chappelle from Chappelle's Show. I think this was when he was Black Bush, which was like the last skit that actually went out before Dave quit the show. When he said, "That shit is gross. Game four was gross, Vinny. Like, I am an undersized, slow basketball player. You know what I value more than anything else? Free throws. They're called free throws because there's no defender there. You can take your time. Even Giannis can take all the time he needs." And the fact that they lost that game because they couldn't make more than half of their free throws should be an indictment on this team and its soul. So I'm grossed out, absolutely grossed out by game four. That's not my only gripe, but it is my main gripe. But this is the question that I've had in my head since that
game.
Well,
two things before you go to your question. Before you go to your question, right? Two things. One, you ever shot free throws with a tight booty? It's kind of hard to get full, you know what I mean, full extension and everything else when your cheeks are tight, right? Right? Secondly, it's hard to breathe when your arms are wrapped around your neck, John.
That's kind of my point. All right, here's my question. Because this, I find this question and the follow-up question to be interesting. Number one, who has been the best player in this series, in your opinion?
In this series, I believe the answer is clear. I believe it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I think if there is a clear answer, that's the clear answer. This is where things get interesting. Who has been the second best player in this series?
I actually do not believe it to be Luka Doncic. And I believe if you're asking me the question, it's because your answer is not Luka Doncic or Kyrie Irving. I believe your answer would be the same as mine, which would be PJ Washington.
I think there's only one choice for the second best player in the series, assuming Shai is the first. And I think it's PJ Washington or Chet Holmgren, who has been very, very good. So, yeah, it has not been Luka. It has not been Kyrie. If it's anyone from Dallas, it's PJ Washington. I could make an argument that Chet Holmgren has been the second most impactful player in this series.
I'm with you. Clearly, I have like these like different like playoff rules from watching decades of playoff basketball. Like I'm some 70-year-old man and I'm not even 40 yet, right? But one of them is you jumble all the players together like playground style. You pick teams and you put the five best players or six or seven, whatever it is, and against their six or seven. And usually by the time you get to the fifth best player, you're going to find out, man, it's 4-1 or it's 3-2. Like one of those things. Or you look at this collection of players. And this collection of players, you will say, okay, before the series, maybe Shai is the best player. Or maybe Luka is the best player because he's actually carried the team to the Western Conference Finals. He has the playoff bona fides. Either way, those will go 1-2. And then you would go Kyrie. And then this is where it gets fun. Because you will say, maybe it's J-Dub, who I gave strong consideration on all defensive team. And then you got Chet Holmgren, who's clearly going to be an all-defensive player and a defensive player of the year candidate because he ain't going to win it as long as Victor Wembanyama's in the league, right? All right, cool. That's where you're wondering, where does Daniel Gafford fit or Derek Lively fit or PJ Washington fit? And they've added an element of toughness. Derek Lively in the draft, Gafford and PJ Washington, subtle acquisitions around the trade deadline for Dallas, which really basically just added a layer of toughness and versatility to a team that needed it. But if Chet Holmgren is going to literally be the guy at the rim that stops everything, that literally says, this is not yield, this is not green, this is red, this says stop, you're not getting anything over the top of me, you're not running through me, A, the series is over, and B, we got problems a lot sooner in the Western Conference.
Vinny, he's averaging like 4 blocks a game in this series. And they're not even really going at him. Like, one of the issues Luka is having in this series is he gets in the lane, sees Chet, and is looking for passes because he's like, I don't know that I can do anything with this. And he has that man outweighed by 70 pounds,
probably
80 pounds. He has way more experience. He's got a floater game and a beautiful mid-range touch, and he is terrified of that man. And I don't know that I blame him. If Chet puts on muscle, like
he won't.
I'm not saying he
won't.
I'm not saying he needs to get like Giannis level muscle, but like if he does the Kevin Durant thing where he's always skinny, but at some point his core strength becomes so good that he's strong and he's got a base and you can't push him around, I don't know how you deal with him. Like, he is an absolute nightmare on both sides of the court. That's why I said, like, he might be the second best player in this series or the second most impactful player in this series. Now, I had a question in here in the rundown of if you are nervous about picking Mavs in seven. And you just said, like, I don't know if the Mavericks win this series, which tells me you're probably getting nervous. I am still kind of confident because all those guys you just listed, Gafford, Lively, Washington, they added toughness, all that stuff. This is the best defense I've seen from the Mavericks in like 10 years. And that they did that Western Conference final run 2 years ago, and that team played very good defense. This defense is so much better than that defense. And they show up every night. And for as hurt as Luka is, like, watch Luka. He cannot run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can jog, but he cannot run. And in game four, he played the best defense he has played in his career.
He did.
It was amazing. And so I love that they have this defense, and I trust that at some point Luka and Kyrie's offense is going to be better than it's been, but maybe I'll just be sitting here waiting until the series is over and the Mavericks go home.
Look, Luka's shooting 39% from the field. Kyrie is actually shooting 46. It just doesn't feel like it because you don't get the Kyrie explosions.
Vinny, he scored 9 points in game four. 9.
Well, it was tough. Here's the problem for Kyrie and Luka in this switchable NBA, right? You take whatever your matchup is. This isn't the NBA that we grew up on where sometimes you have to eat your 40. Not to compromise the rest of your defense. If a guy has sent a limo for you, you're just going to eat your 40. This is not that. This is where you're going to switch and hunt and switch and hunt. But the problem with Oklahoma City is you got Lu Dort, all defense. J-Dub, future all defense. Then you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, hands almighty, lead the league in steals. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe you can body him. Maybe you can give him a shoulder. But ain't no easy win. Remember that? Remember Nutty Professor? The first Nutty Professor where Eddie Murphy, the grandmother, and Eddie Murphy, the uncle, had gotten into it. And the grandmother was like, ain't nothing but a short walk. You walk over, you're limping back. You know, that sort of thing. That's what it feels like when you're going against those dudes. You're going to limp back because ain't no easy wins. There's no easy wins. And if you, by chance, happen to get by one of those dudes, guess who you got standing at the rim? You got Chet at the rim. And maybe your best chance is throwing your body into him. But it doesn't look like that's a viable strategy. Like Dallas in this series, so far, shooting 38 from three. That's really respectable. But they're shooting 42 from the field. I don't know if you can win a series that way. So if you ask me, am I nervous? I tell you, John, no, I'm not nervous. Fucking terrified, okay? Terrified, John.
Hey, wait, one last thing before we get off this series. I think the best defender on that team next year is probably Chet Holmgren. I think the second best defender on that team is not in the starting lineup yet.
Continue.
Have you watched Cason Wallace?
Yes, but I would say from the standpoint of like strength.
Yeah, he doesn't have the strength that Lu Dort has. He doesn't really have, well, I guess he kind of does have Jalen Williams' length. He's just everywhere. And his defensive instincts and his hands and his feet are so fast. I'm if you replace Josh Giddey in the lineup with that man, I don't know how you score against that team anymore.
Well, it's funny that you say that because it's time to have a conversation about Josh Giddey. You know what I mean? Like, And he tried to shoot more early, but it just didn't feel like it was in the flow of the offense. It felt like he had heard people say, Josh Giddey, what are you doing out there besides, you know, doing aerobics? Yeah. You know what I mean? Doing some cardio. Like, but that takes them so far out of their offensive flow. They don't necessarily need him to shoot and score, but just like with Minnesota, where I mentioned early, where, you know, maybe Jaden McDaniels will make some shots and Nikhil Alexander Walker will make some shots. But unless you have guys that teams will respect, either as a screener or in the dunker or in the corner, it will compress the defense that much more and leave no space at all for your main ball handlers to get through. And that's why you're seeing what you're seeing defensively, because Dallas is a really good defensive team. Oklahoma City has got all the dudes that we named. This is an old school defensive struggle. This is why, once again, y'all, this is why I love the playoffs. This is why we wake up to Charmed every damn morning. All right? This is why we stand up late, watching Inside the NBA, waiting to see what Chuck is going to say and how Shaq is going to egg him on. Like, let's enjoy these moments while we still got them. All right, cool. Now, last one is Cleveland and Boston. The series is over. Look, Donovan Mitchell, when you guys hear this, Donovan Mitchell is still on the injury report. Caris LeVert entered the injury report. Jared Allen hasn't been seen. Cleveland's running out of bodies, and they've clearly run out of opportunities. Like, if you're missing three of your top six, three of your top seven, that is a tough thing to overcome when you're playing against the Boston team that clearly looks like a regular season juggernaut playing playoff basketball, right? Now, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, they make plays when it counts. And then they will have a game where they just forget that their controller needs to be plugged in. Like, you ever play, you know, NBA 2K with your kid or something like that, and they want to play with you, so you just hand them the controller and it's not plugged in, and they think that they are playing with you. Like, that's how the Celtics play when they have one of these dumbass games where they just throw something away. They can afford to have a couple more of these, because they ain't really no competition in the Eastern Conference. They can't afford to have any of these in the playoffs. And that is one of those reasons why I think we are very hesitant to figure out or to proclaim how good the Celtics are. If it's Boston and Denver and the NBA Finals, the road in which both teams took to get there will play a huge part in how that series starts and finishes. Maybe Boston will be the fresher team coming into it. If you consider Kristaps Porzingis, if he comes back off of his injury in full health, but Denver will be road tested. They will have faced arguably, you know, one of the three or four best teams in the league, and in Minnesota, coming down from an 0-2 deficit, having their manhood challenged by Coach Klein, as in Michael Malone. You know what I mean? Like Coach Klein, ain't that the water boy?
Yes, Coach Klein is the water boy.
Yeah, you trying my manhood, Coach Klein. Like that one. Yeah, right? Had their manhood challenged and came out on the other side. Boston, all of their issues are self-inflicted, right? Every single one of them. But that ain't the reason why we brought that up. We brought that up kind of because we had to. But we really brought that up because LeBron showed up to Game 4. Showed up with did you see this, John? He showed up with a bottle of wine, a bottle of water, and caffeine. Or at least we think that was caffeine, right? That could very well have been whiskey, right?
Sure. Sometimes you mix whiskey in with the coffee, too. A little Irish coffee.
That could be. Two Americas. Don't think LeBron engages that far. That was a full-ass bottle of wine with cork in it, okay? I am a red wine drinker. I love my cabs, right? Pinot Noirs are very dry, but I love my cabs. Wonder if that was what LeBron was drinking. I ain't trying to drink no cab with whiskey, let alone cab with coffee and water. That's how you know you got a driver, right? And that's also how you know you got a lock on your phone, right? Only other person that can open LeBron's phone is Bronny, because they got the same face. That's it. Hey, Bronny, go get your dad's phone. For what? Go get your dad's phone. Okay. Open it. I can't open it. don't know his passcode. Put your face on it. Voila. All right, cool. All right. Now.
Is this how we're going to break the free agency news? Someone's gonna convince Bronny to open Bron's phone, look in the text messages, and all of a sudden we know Vinny.
He ain't that naive. Bronny knows the game. Look, there's no way in hell Bron would want Bronny to play on the same team with him if he didn't know the game. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Game recognized, game granddad, and you looking kind of unfamiliar. You know what I mean?
Yes, but answer me this question. Mm-hmm. Why was LeBron at a Cleveland Cavaliers home playoff game?
Nothing LeBron does is by accident. I don't think he's trying to go back to Cleveland. I've seen some people posit that LeBron went back when there was a cold war between he and Dan Gilbert, and he went back for his Jonas Ilgauskas' jersey retirement, and that sort of began the thawing out, and then boom, a year later or whatever it was, he was back in Cleveland. For one, if I'm the Cleveland Cavaliers, I ain't giving you a chance to leave me three times, right? Like, I don't know where we don't have pride anymore, all right? Maybe I'm speaking as a single man, but if you leave me once, you ain't leaving me twice, let alone the third time. Maybe that's why I'm single. Maybe I don't give too much grace. But if I'm organizationally, I ain't giving you no damn grace. You can show up. You can have front row seats. You can bring Rich Paul. You can bring Savannah. You can bring everybody you want to. You are a Cav for life. But that don't mean you're coming to play for me. Now, what you also not going to do is come to the Cleveland Cavaliers game and be chummy with Donovan Mitchell and be trying to recruit him to L.A. Because Donovan Mitchell, in case you don't know, Donovan Mitchell will be offered a max extension, one presumes, by the Cavs this offseason. And if he turns down the max extension, then there will be a clear signal that Donovan Mitchell will want to be traded, and we will go through the dance of where will Donovan Mitchell go. And I know people will say, oh, that's ugly. They shouldn't do that, all this other type of stuff. But consider this. Donovan Mitchell will be in the league 8 years next year. Usually by year eight, if you are a player of that stature, you are either drafted to a place where you want to go or traded to a place that you want to go. And neither has happened for him. He'll probably have the entire NBA as his oyster, except for the New York Knicks, because it just seems like too much positional duplication between he and Jalen Brunson, two smaller guards who need the ball. But every other place, I think, would line up to have trade offers in hand for Donovan Mitchell, including the Miami Heat, who I feel like have been just sort of laying in the weeds, big game hunting, waiting on a real star. And I think Donovan Mitchell fits the profile of a real star. We haven't heard anything about it. I'm just saying I can picture him with Jimmy Butler and Bam, and then boom, they're right back to the top of the Eastern Conference next year, and I am back on South Beach in June. Yes, that is me speaking it. They say speaking into existence, all that stuff, right? I spoke Kelly Rowland into existence, but she ain't showed up at my door. All right, cool. But the Lakers also, it's come out, it's been revealed that they have four, you know, sort of candidates for their coaching search. And of course, these things are fluid. They can change. J.J. Redick, of course, from ESPN. James Borrego coached the Charlotte Hornets. Sam Cassell. And, you know, it's just one of those weird things. First-time head coaches for an aging LeBron James. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work. And then on top of that, first-time head coach, and you deal with LeBron at his advanced age, Anthony Davis with his injuries, maybe they get his third star, maybe they don't. And then there's the prospect of bringing on a Bronny James. And that's where all this gets tricky. And Bronny actually spoke at the draft combine yesterday, and Kristen P. wrote something on it. And you got to see a lot of the footage. And basically, Bronny was basically letting everybody know, I want to make it to the NBA. Like, the whole playing with my dad stuff, like, that's his thing. He's not saying he doesn't want to do it, but he's not fully jumping into it saying, you know, I want all those tweets about me and Instagram posts about me when, you know, we act up. I ain't trying to hear all that and go home for Sunday dinner. That man will never know peace. And he 18 years old, or however old he is.
Can I add something to this?
Sure.
I think it was one of the first episodes of the Mind the Game podcast that LeBron did with JJ.
Okay.
Or does with JJ. Where he was talking about the sacrifices he's had to make in his life to be the type of player that he is. And he talks about his schedule. And he was like, you wake up, you go to the gym, you come home, you eat, you nap, you go back to the gym. And he basically said, I don't spend a lot of time with my family. I don't have time for recreational activities. I'm so focused on my whole life is built around trying to be the best basketball player in the world. And I've had to sacrifice parts of my life to get there. When I heard the way Bronny was like, yeah, I'll play with my dad. That's cool. But like, I haven't grown up going like, man, I really want to play with my dad. It all kind of clicked to me. Not that they have like a strained relationship. I'm not trying to put anything like that on them. I'm just like, you could see how he didn't grow up with his dad being his whole world and they spent every day together and he learned everything from him. He's probably closer to his mom than he is his dad. But playing in the NBA and doing it with his dad is probably a cool thing to potentially do, but it's not the end goal for him and it never has been. And when you realize that like LeBron was so focused on being a player and family maybe had to come second sometimes, it makes even more sense to me.
Well, here's the other part of it. A, Bronny wants to come to the NBA and be an NBA player. That's why he named, you know, when people ask him his player comps, he named like a guy like Jrue Holiday. You know what I mean? Like that, like there's a sense of groundedness that I think popped up in that moment. But when you want to come in and be an NBA player, you want to be an NBA player, as in, man, this is the life. This is the lifestyle. I'm not trying to have my daddy hovering over me, because to y'all, he's LeBron James. All these things. To me, he's my daddy and I share his name. And let me tell you, as somebody who shares the name as his daddy, you don't get your name. Your name is not yours. He has to be Bronny because his dad is LeBron James, right? I'm Vinny because my daddy is Vincent, okay? Nothing wrong with it, but you want your own identity.
Also, you want to be your own man, right?
Yeah, John, you want to be your own man. You want to carve out your own place in the world. The person who's really got to be feeling like, you know, like something is the middle child. Like, you know, the baby, she's the star of the family. If you've seen them TikTok videos and all that stuff, Zuri is the star, right? Bronny is the namesake. If I'm Bryce, I'm like, hey, yo, Pops, you don't think I'm good enough to want to play with? You don't mention wanting to play with me. I know I'm a couple years behind and all that, but like, am I not important to you? Now, John, maybe that's the middle child in me coming out. But, you know, so be it, right? Cool. All right. Either way, we've taken up enough of you guys' time today. That is all we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this podcast. Stick around for No Cap Room tomorrow, and I'll be back on Monday with another episode of The Good Word. John, everybody else, until then, be safe.